Hi, this is Drew, and thanks for listening to our podcast. Hopefully, you've been enjoying our show for a while now, but if you're a brand new listener, then the next 50 seconds are not for you, so just go ahead and fast forward a bit. I just wanted to ask our longtime listeners to consider becoming patrons of The Drew Marshall Show, because by throwing us just a few bucks each month, you'll be helping what many tell us is the most brutally authentic spiritual show they've ever heard stay on the air. Look, as loyal podcast listeners, you've been getting the same programming our radio listeners have been hearing live Saturdays 1 to 5 for the last 16 years. Except you get to hear everything commercial-free, you smart consumer, you. Well, because of a brand new arrangement with our studio, our expenses have now gone through the roof. And to be brutally honest, we could use the help to cover those costs. So just before you go to bed tonight, maybe you could stop by our website and click on the giant click here to become a patron sign. And if a whole bunch of you were able to scrounge up like $4 per month, then individually your $4 would have just made a massive difference in helping us cover what it costs to bring you the Drew Marshall Show. Okay, that's it. Sorry to bug you. Now on with the show. I hope you have a good sleep tonight after you become a patron. You are listening to The Drew Marshall Show. Thank you for tuning in. We're streaming live at drewmarshall.ca. We're on the MyJoy Radio app and iTunes or Google Play and across the GTA on AM 1250. We're going to focus on the Enneagram a whole lot this month. Last month it was Love Month. We talked to love gurus and we talked to couples who've been married for 50 plus years. This month, Enneagram is going to be a bit of a feature. And the guy that's singing the song, I just found out about this cat. This cat.
You're so cool, Drew.
Sleeping at Last. One of our interns went gaga when we said that name. It was like, really? You know, because I'm old. I don't know.
I thought because she had insomnia.
That's funny.
Thank you. I'm here all week.
Dad joke, Tim.
I'm here all week.
Singer, songwriter, producer, composer recently released this album, I guess, Enneagram. 9 songs for the 9 Enneagram types. You can go to sleepingatlast.com. We're going to talk to him in just a second. I don't know why I did all that promotion for him, because right now, it's not him. It's Chris Hewerts. Whose last name is spelled H-E-W-E-R-T-Z in the United States. H-E-U, take the one half off of the W. H-E-U-E-R-T-Z, chrishertz.com. I like this guy a lot. He's a speaker and Enneagram coach, a nonprofit consultant, anti-human trafficking activist, and he's the author of Sacred Enneagram, Finding Your Unique Path to Spiritual Growth. Chris, dude, I was trying to figure out the last time you were on the show. It's got to be like a decade ago, man.
Oh, man, I think it was maybe about a year and a half ago when that book dropped, actually.
Oh, okay.
Oh, come on. But, man, time flies.
I know. Someone told me about this guy, Sleeping at Last, a.k.a. Ryan O'Neill. Really? That's his name, Ryan O'Neill? And so I was listening to it, and I thought, oh, I like this. And then I was checked out his podcast. Of course, guess which podcast I checked out? Oh, the one that had to do with my Enneagram type, as we all do, especially fours. And then I heard your yap there again, and I thought, man, we got to get this guy on again. You are such a good communicator, Chris. You really are. And the way you tore apart my personality type was amazing. It was so good. So good. So I don't know what to do. I really don't know what to do today with you. Like, I certainly want everyone to get your book, no question. Sacred Enneagram, Finding Your Unique Path to Spiritual Growth. I think we should do, because we're running out of time here. My apologies for that. We had some cult people on, and they hijacked the show, as they tend to do.
Awesome.
Yeah. So maybe we should just, how do you explain the Enneagram to the person beside you on the plane that really doesn't want you to talk that much?
Well, yeah. I mean, and actually, I don't want to talk to people on planes myself, so I sort of just roll it up like this and say, the Enneagram is an ancient process teaching or tradition with about a 40-45 year personality overlay. And when you start to look at the Enneagram of personality, which is really sort of the newest evolving aspect of the tradition, it basically shows us that our personalities have become this highly developed skill set that we've wrapped up around a so-called childhood wound so that we don't have to tell ourselves the truth about who we really are. And if they're still listening, then I'll say, and the bummer is most of us don't know that we don't know who we are. So we actually project this ego mythology, trick it out, and build scaffolding around it so that we can stay asleep to our essence. And I think what the Enneagram shows us is we don't have to be these personalities, that we can actually live beyond type and remember what our purpose, reason for being here is.
So you have been mentored by some folks I've had on the show, Father Richard Rohr. I don't even know what words to use to describe this guy other than like a cool priest or something like that. Like he's like a spiritual pebble in your shoe. He irritates you enough that you want to lean into love.
Yeah, Richard's legit. I'm sorry, Father Richard is legit.
Should we call him Father Richard?
No, he of course always says, just call me Richard, but I honestly, Father Richard Rohr is amazing, and he really is one of the true luminaries out there.
Yeah.
He came across the Enneagram in the 70s and 80s when the Jesuits were sort of leaking it and really without permission, and so he sort of had to keep it low-key, but it was his spiritual director that introduced it to him, and of course he used it in the meetings that he would have with folks who were visiting him for spiritual direction. Father Richard ended up writing really one of the first books that made this teaching sort of street legal for Christians. And so if you need to rub some Bible on it, his book is a great starting point. But
and then I had Russ Hudson on last year, and man, I mean, you know, he's certainly a guru in this whole thing. And Gail Scott works with Russ a lot. She does a special on my show every year almost about the Enneagram. And anyway, I don't know why I'm talking about all these other people. My point is, you're actually now the real deal when it comes to this stuff. And I love how you communicate it, because sometimes it can get a bit ethereal. Sometimes it can get a bit woo-woo. And I think the Jesus people are already sort of freaked out about, well, first of all, the symbol of the thing. You know, people go, oh, it's a pentagram. No, it's nine.
Or two pentagrams having sex.
Yes.
It actually might be Satan's tramp tattoo. We're still investigating.
It's Satan's tramp stamp. I love that. But see, here's the thing. Chris is a real Jesus guy, like a real one, not even a fake one. He's a real one. And he's also an Enneagram guy, so the rest of you can just breathe easy now. So there's the sort of, like, why should people care about this? They don't know anything about it. They hear the thing.
Mm.
It sounds a little bit woo-woo. It sounds like, I don't know, some kind of zodiac star sign-y thing or something. Like, how do you help Jesus people just take a pill?
Yeah, well, I think why it's finding momentum and popularity now, and especially within sort of historic Christian faith communities or communities that sort of ascribe to a historic Christian faith tradition, is because I think in the evolution of our human consciousness, we really are sort of facing the urgency that we're no longer tethered to the source of our identity. And I think you see this in an age of social media where, man, everybody just sort of brands themselves around, you know, whatever causes they are most concerned about, and these sort of so curated and so sort of staged selfies or images. And we put this notion of who we want people to think we are out on these social media feeds, and we lose ourselves. And so I think, first of all, like it's sort of a calling back to home. But, you know, for people of faith, I think religion has failed us, and I think people who have been socialized within Western Christianity don't do a good job of loving themselves. Well, we've been sort of taught that we are fundamentally busted, that we're essentially sort of organic firewood for the fires of hell. And I think what the Enneagram can also show us is a tremendous amount of gentleness and compassion for ourselves. And all religions in their sacred texts have something to the effect that reminds us that we can't love anyone other than the way that we've learned to love ourselves. And for religious people, man, that's a hard game to sort of find yourself in. So there's something beautiful in this. There's something, like I said, compassionate in this. And I say this a lot, but I think the Enneagram does sort of show us a compassionate sketch of possibilities for who we can become when we say yes to ourselves and when we say yes to love.
So when I use the phrase personality type or a typing system or, you know, I don't know, whatever terminology I was. People usually go, oh, you mean Myers-Briggs, right? Like most people, I think, know that. So how is this different than that?
Sure. So Myers-Briggs is sort of a way of measuring temperament and how we relate to our environments. And you know, some of the folks out there suggest that your Myers-Briggs temperament type is fluid, it's flexible, that, you know, maybe the older and more mature you come, the less extroverted you may actually be. My sense is this: your Enneagram type is less about, let's say, nurture, and it's more about nature. Like I said, I really do believe fundamentally that each of us are born purpose, that there's a gift we're supposed to bring into the world. Problem is in our infancy or early childhood, we lose touch with that gift, and that's when the pain of humanity sort of brutally introduces itself to us. Well, what we do in that losing touch or losing contact with essence is we began to form personality. And so, like I said, I really do believe our personality is a highly developed skill set, but it's not who we are. It's the mask that we've sort of put on top of our essence, and it keeps us asleep from remembering why we're here. And that's the important work here, is to remember why we're here. Because if we do, then we actually contribute to sort of the healing of the world. And I believe this. We are all yearning for the new we. And I think when you return to your essence, you actually sort of stand in line with those other midwives that are helping birth this new we that will heal the world.
All I heard was new we and midwives.
Sounds like a country song.
When I describe the Enneagram to people, I say it's the oldest personality typing system out there. Been around for a long, long time. Old thing. Old, very old. I use the word old many times. And then I say, unlike Myers-Briggs, which for me felt like Myers-Briggs was all about corporate and leadership and work and business and striving and it was all about patting you on the back as well, the Enneagram actually reveals to you your skid marks or your blind spots.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I will say this: the Enneagram of personality overlay is really only about 45 years old, and so, in a sense, that's still fairly young. It's still evolving. That's why I think it's really exciting right now to see what's happening out there in some of the corners of where folks are thinking on the edges. And yes, you're right. Like, I think when it first, like I said, got sort of released into the wild by some Jesuits that were part of the Loyola community in Chicago, they used to sort of introduce it through the shape of our tragic flaw or through what was sort of maybe perceived as sin tendencies. And so when you come across it with that sort of accent, yeah, it does feel like it's sort of rubbing your nose in the messes that you've made it in your own life. And that's true. We really are the source of our own pain. But I do think that there are some of us out there that are trying to think differently about this and trying to also show some compassion in this, that, you know, we're not as bad as our worst moments. And the truth is we're not as good as our best moments, but we potentially could become even better than we imagine. It's just remembering what we've lost. And so the bummer is a lot of us don't want to. A lot of us don't want to wake up. A lot of us don't want to take the masks off. A lot of us don't want to do the hard work because it is devastating and humiliating to the ego. And when the Enneagram does sort of show you the landscape and the contours of your ego, it's too much for a lot of us. I mean, I'll be honest. Like, I've been working with this for years and years and years, and there are points where I'm just like, I need a break. I can't keep looking inward at this because it is exhausting. Mm-hmm. And that's the point. The point is, if I've spent 40-some years of my entire life building out a skill set, and let's call that my personality, I'm not going to be able to deconstruct that skill set or that personality in 4 months or 4 years. It may be a lifelong journey of, you know, minor conversions, but there's hope in this. And that's what I love about the teaching. And I think that's why it's resonating so much with folks. And you know, Ryan O'Neill, Sleeping Out Loud, he's doing some really beautiful work with this.
Oh.
And he's brilliant. In fact, what he's doing is tapping into, actually, I think, the ancient roots of this as a process teaching.
Yes.
Apart from the personality. And he's actually sort of, you know, padding some personality on top of it. But man, when you do listen to his songs, they rock people to the core. They move you at a really existential level. So,
well,
it's a great time right now. It's a great time for the Enneagram.
Yeah, the first song I heard him do was, of course, the one about me, Enneagram 4, and the first two lines of the song had something to do with blindness or you know, losing your sight or something like that. And I just finished talking about, you know, how years ago for the last week of Lent, I went blind for the week. I had a friend source out some contact lenses that took away my vision, and it was like, wow, what are you doing? And then I kept going with the lyrics and pulling apart the lyrics, and it cracked me open to the point of tears. This stupid song of his made my eyes leak. And so I actually want to get him on the show just to tell him off, you know.
He's a sweetheart. He's one of the best human beings I know. And he is a genius. Like,
yeah,
he is.
All right, let's stop talking about him. He's on
the true luminary.
He's on the show next. I don't want to talk about him anymore. All right, Chris, what do you want to do? Do you want to give a quick overview of the nine types, just to give people a little fortune cookie snapshot of each type? Because I've got two interns in the room here, and what I would like them to, you know what? To be honest, I've got a case of Kool-Aid that I want everyone to drink, and it's called the Enneagram. And I think if I knew what I know now when I was these kids' age, would have saved me a lot of stinking grief, a lot of grief. And I want these two interns to hunker down into the Enneagram. So could you do a little overview of the nine types, and then we can see if the two girls here have any, they go, oh, I think I'm a four, I think I'm a, you know, and then they can go online and do the test or whatever. But what do you think?
Sure. Yeah, sure. We can run around that circle real quick. So if you start at point one, right, and this is sometimes called by either the Enneagram Institute or the Nerve Tradition, which are essentially the two Yale and Harvard's out there in the Enneagram world that have given names that have really stuck. Type one is called the reformer or the perfectionist, right? This, the need to be perfect. This is the person who is tragically wrecked with the fear that they are somehow inherently corrupt, but the truth is they're the best people out there. They're frustrated idealists, and they're frustrated by the idealism of their notions of goodness and perfection, and they're frustrated because they'll never be able to live into it. So, you know, like Father Richard Rohr says, every unrealistic expectation is a resentment waiting to happen, and this is one of the things that one struggle with is an inner resentment towards themselves because they feel like they should be better since they know better. Two, sometimes called the helper or the giver, this is the need to be needed. This is the heart-forward sort of source of nurturing love in the Enneagram, and they're racked with this fear that they're not loved for who they are but what they give, because they do give themselves away. They do respond to people's needs, and they actually see what people need and know what people need even before we're aware of it. And so there's a tenderness there, but really there's this fear of rejection that drives them. And the fear of rejection is rooted in an early holding environment where a protective caregiver looked at this tender heart and said, oh my God, somebody's going to break this. And so I have to take care of it. I have to look after it. But man, that little boy, that little girl who was a two, who wasn't being nurtured by a protective caregiver, misunderstood that as rejection and doubled down on that nurturing stance. And that's how they live now. Three is sometimes called the performer or achiever. This is the need to succeed. And these sort of names and these little sort of cliche needs bum me out super hard, because the three doesn't have a need to succeed. The three just wants to be loved, like we all do in nine different ways. The problem is the three is disconnected from their heart. And as little kids trying to fill what was hollowed out or that sense of emptiness in their heart, they reach for the lowest hanging fruit, which is recognition, affirmation, attention. And they exchange that recognition and affirmation and attention as love. And look, they're smarter than that. And they knew it wasn't real love, but it was a quick fix. It was a quick hit. And so they kept at it. And so they look ambitious. They look driven. And it's not that they're the most ambitious of all the nine types. It's just that maybe they're the most obvious about how it is that they go about trying to fill the emptiness of their heart, which is by ascribing value to everyone in their lives and everything that they do. And that comes from their basic fear, which is that they don't have intrinsic value. So if they don't think they have intrinsic value, they're going to try to earn that value as a way of making themselves more valuable or more worthy of the love that they desire.
Okay, hold on. So just recap. One, the little names that go with them. One was what?
The perfectionist or the reformer.
Two?
The helper or the giver.
Three?
And three is the performer or achiever. And I will say this, I generally never use these names because they simply describe social function,
yeah,
not essence, but they're helpful. They're helpful. It's a helpful rhetorical device to sort of pick up and capture the energy of the nine types if this is new to you.
All right, let's move on to me.
Oh, boy. So the four. they sometimes call the four the romantic or the individualist. I sometimes, with all affection in my heart, call the four the diva. This is the need to be unique. And these folks are wrecked with the fear that they are somehow disconnected from the source of their identity. And so, you know, what's a bummer for fours is they're sort of cliched out as really artistic and really capable of seeing beauty in everything. And yes, this is what's happening. Like all of us in different ways, we're projecting outside of ourselves what we don't want to contend with inside of ourselves. We're projecting outside of ourselves what we wish we could possess for ourselves. And so they're seeing significance and beauty in everything and everyone else as a way of hoping that it would be, on a subconscious level, hoping that it would be mirrored back to them. And here's the truth here is they already have this sort of, the holy idea here is this holy origin. They already have this sort of deep knowing of where they come from, but because they're somehow disconnected from that, they just feel like they don't fit in. They feel like they're chronically and consistently misunderstood. And in fact, sometimes it's like they look at their family and their siblings and they're like, I don't think I'm part of this family. In fact, I'm wondering if I was adopted and never told. There's just an ache there. There's an ache to belong. There's an ache to find really the root of who they truly are. And so there are sometimes people that deal with a lot of inner pain and there can be a lot of sadness and this sort of longing and fantasizing of wishing and knowing who they could become.
Okay, thank you for that. I am not, how do I say this? We got to move on here because we're running out of time, but just quickly, there are days I wish I was any other type because the drama that comes with a four is just a nuisance.
Well,
okay.
It's my puppy. And I think my dog's actually a social two with a one wing, that's sort of double compliant. All right, so five. Five is called the observer or the investigator. In Spanish, I love this. They call the five the theorist. This is the need to understand. This is the most cerebrally evacuated of all the types. They really just sort of go up into their head and they use the brilliance of their mind to sort of suss out and determine not only answers and solutions, but really getting clarity on the right questions. Now, these folks are often misunderstood, just like the fours, because the fours and fives sit here at the bottom of the circle, and it's sort of like they're shouldering everything for all nine types down there, sort of carrying all of it on their backs. But fives are pretty selective about who they say yes to. And when they do say yes, and this may be only two or three or four people in their lives, you won't know more lavish generosity and faithfulness. But if you're not in that little small circle, you sometimes may perceive them as a little distant. The sixes, this is sometimes called the skeptic or the loyalist. This is the need to be secure. And these are really the threat forecasters, contingency planning, sort of worst case scenario thinkers of the Enneagram. And they're doubling down on these worst case scenarios. And they're going to these really, really difficult places mentally as simply a way of trying to create stability and security for everybody in their life and everybody that they love. And so if they go there for us when trauma shows up in our life, when threat shows up in our life, they've already sort of solved it. They've already sort of found the back door or the exit. And this is really a gift of theirs, but it causes them to suffer from a lot of anxiety and there can really be a lot of wound up panic in their minds. The seven is sometimes called the...
Hold on. So let's just recap 4, 5, and 6, because these girls, I don't know if they're paying attention, but this is a quiz, kids. You got to have an answer at the end of it. So 4 was what again?
The individualist or the tragic romantic.
Or the drama diva. Okay, 5?
Is the investigator, the observer, the theorist.
6?
And that's the skeptic or the loyalist.
Okay, all right, last 3.
All right, so 7s. I love 7s, but poor 7s, just like 1s and 4s, are frustrated idealists and so often misunderstood. The 7 is called the enthusiast. This is the need to avoid pain. This is the type that doesn't actually have a natural connection to its heart center. And that's where you sort of see these crisscrossing lines in the circle sort of show the 7 as the anomaly. It's the only type that doesn't have a natural connection to its heart center. But you get tricked by these folks because they seem really warm and charming and winsome. And what they're essentially trying to do is feed off of the hearts of other people, but it's never going to be enough. And so there's kind of this voraciousness. And the passion here for the 7 is unfortunately called gluttony, but it really is this drive in the 7 to overdo everything that brings them pleasure so that they can stay disconnected from their own pain. But because they're in their heads, they're incredibly fast problem solvers, incredibly quick thinkers. And they really are on perpetual vacation from their own pain. And so that's why it's so fun to be around them, because they take us on these sort of mini escapades with them. One of my teachers, Michael Goldberg, who's a 7, once told me that they say that the bottom of the feet of 7s wrinkle the least of all 9 types. And that's sort of a symbol of how they sort of walk on air. The 8, which I happen to be dominant in, is the challenger. This is the need to be against. These are the folks that are just sort of too much, and the intensity and the drive and the excessiveness wears them and everybody in their lives out. These are the folks who hate bullies, but they're the biggest bully. And this is because part of their early holding environment in their childhood, they had to grow up a little bit too fast. And so what happened was part of their inner child was sort of repressed or hidden from them. And so in their adult lives, they're actually still trying to protect that inner child. But like I said, they're projecting that into proxy battles outside of themselves. And so they become really great defenders of vulnerability. So they can also, like 7s, be really great humanitarians, champions for the underdog. They can be inappropriate and vulgar. And what they're doing in that on a subconscious level is just sort of testing the thickness of the ice between people. Because if my foul language causes you to dismiss me, fabulous. That was efficient. And you won't have to deal with me 6 months or 10 months or 2 years later when I'm really going to mess it up or really hurt you or really offend you. So let's just get it out of the way.
Chris, when you and I first met and hung out a little bit, you said to me, are you sure you're not an 8?
So 8s and 4s do have a lot of energetic connections here because, you know, for example, in their relationships to the rules, 8s are just like, show me a rule that I haven't broken yet because I need to get to it.
Yep.
And 4s are like, the rules don't apply to me. They apply to the rest of you. So there is a kind of connection there.
Yeah. Okay. Last one.
And then 9. 9 is the peacemaker or the mediator or the arbitrator. This is the need to avoid. And these are folks who, sadly, in the early holding environment, because they were born to be a source of love, thought that anything that drew attention to them was on a subconscious level, kind of selfish. So they minimized everything about themselves as they maximized everyone else in their environment. And in minimizing themselves and in making their needs or desires less important, they hid them from themselves. And so there's a real need for 9s here to return to this owning their power, owning their opinions, owning what it is that they want, because that's loving themselves. But you see, they feel really bad about that. And so, like I said, they're so others forward. And this is where the mediator, peacemaker, arbitrator sort of role shows up. They're incredibly understanding of everyone else. They're incredibly dialed in to maintaining the peace. And what this is simply the projection of their fear that there's an inner fragmentation in their own lives. And so they're trying to knit and harmonize their external world together as a way of keeping themselves asleep to that.
Well done, man. Well done. Okay, recap the last three. The names are again?
So the seven, we would sometimes hear that as the enthusiast, the eight, the challenger, and the nine, the peacemaker.
Okay. All right. Girls, what do you think? Just shout out one that resonates right now. Well, we won't hold you to it.
7, 9.
7 or 9 for Rachel. All right. And the 7 again is, Chris?
The enthusiast, and the 9 is the peacemaker. And yes, the 7 and 9 will commonly mistype because their conflict avoidance style they share, and that's positive outlook. So rather than escalate a fight, they try to look on the bright side. They try to sort of see the silver lining. They sort of maybe protest, like, oh, it could be worse, or it's not as bad as you think. And they're not lying. But that's one of the reasons they may mistype. But how you sort of divine that mistyping pair, though, is that the 9s really want autonomy in the relationships, and the 7s really want security.
Okay. All right. Erica?
5, maybe some 9.
She said 5, maybe 9.
Yeah. So that's also a super common mistyping pair. And it's usually 9s mistyping as 5s.
And a 9 is a peacemaker, and a 5 is?
Is an investigator. And here's why that shows up pretty typically. Because these two are both withdrawn and detached in their social styles. And so 5s move sort of away from folks so that they can move into their head as a way of taking care of us. But 9s sort of step back from folks as a way of maintaining a sense of inner autonomy. So that's also that makes sense when you see those two sometimes show up.
Chris, I feel like we're ripping everyone off from more of you. Because I know you're good to poo-poo yourself. You're so good at that you could be Canadian, but you are such a great communicator, and how you've grown in this Enneagram thing is just perfect. You are doing the right thing at the right time in life, man. I am so proud of you. Thank you.
Mm. Yeah, I appreciate it, man. Appreciate you having me.
Yeah, well, Chris Huertz, H-E-U-E-R-T-Z is how they say it in the States, Z here in Canada, ChrisHuertz.com. If you don't know how to spell his name, or you don't know what we're doing, it's on our website. Go to this week's show and you'll find a picture of him, and the name of the book is Sacred Enneagram, Finding Your Unique Path to Spiritual Growth. He's such a Jesus guy that he's also an anti-human trafficking activist. So put that in your holy water and
drink it.
Chris, thank you. We are going to just reach out to your pal next, Ryan O'Neill, a.k.a. Sleeping at Last, singer, songwriter, producer, composer, recently released this album. The album's not called Enneagram. What's it called? Atlas, I think.
Atlas.
And but it's basically 9 songs for the 9 Enneagram types, and I was just blown away by what this guy did. Love it. So we're going to get him on the line next. Chris, thank you. I don't know how to say thank you enough without sounding like I got a man crush going on here.
Oh, you're such a 4.
No way, man. Appreciate you having me. Behave. Stay warm up there.
He knows me. Behave, baby.
Behave.
All right. Thanks, dude. See you, Chris. Bye-bye. Listen to this. This is the song that Sleeping at Last wrote about me. All right? This is the song about Enneagram 4s. We're not going to play the whole thing. Well, we might go out with it at the end of this interview. But when I heard this stinking song about me, it made me leak.
I'm turning out